York City to protest arms supplies by the U.S. and its allies to Ukraine, blaming the conflict on such moves. And marking the 6th anniversary of Catalonia's failed independence referendum, thousands march in Barcelona chanting anti-government slogans. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here on World News. Iran's foreign ministry spokesperson says that Tehran is against any geopolitical changes in the South Caucasus region. Nasser Kanani said in his weekly presser, Tehran supports expansion of transit routes and networks in the region in line with regional interests. That was in reference to Turkey's proposal for a new regional road link. Kanani also called for the differences, including those between Baku and Yerevan, to be resolved through regional frameworks. The spokesman said Tehran is against foreign intervention and presence in the Caucasus. He added Tehran supports proposals for a framework of dialogue among the three South Caucasus countries of Armenia, Azerbaijan, and Georgia, and neighboring countries of Iran, Russia, and Turkey. The format aims to address security concerns and promote economic and transport ties. Our correspondent, Gisumisha Ahmadi, earlier joined us with more details on what Iran's foreign ministry spokesman had to say about the situation in the South Caucasus.
Iran strongly emphasized that any kind of differences should be discussed and resolved at the negotiating table rather than the battlefield, and of course has always proposed to mediate and negotiate in order for the resolution of the problems between both sides, Iran and Azerbaijan. Also, there was talks about a corridor, and Iran once again reiterated that it strongly opposes any geopolitical change to the region, but any transit routes that would benefit the countries in the region and the nations, of course, is something that Iran would support. In the meantime, Iran is also offering humanitarian aid to the Armenians that have been affected in the South Caucasus. And because of the recent developments, of course, the Iranian Red Crescent Society has been sending aid to Armenians in the region. In the meantime, Azerbaijan and Iran are on the path to have their missions back stationed in their capitals, in the respective capitals.
Iran's army is about to hold large-scale joint drone drills across large parts of the country's central and southern areas.
100 drills will be conducted as of tomorrow morning. That's what we're planning to do. The drills will be conducted both in daylight and at night and in the electronic warfare atmosphere. So we should see how long our drones endure when it comes to electronic warfare.
Drill's commander says Iran is boosting a defense capabilities against any possible threat. Rear Admiral Sayari stressed Iran has made great progress in the drone industry in recent years, placing itself among the strongest in the region. The Iranian Army's Navy, Ground, and Air Forces will be taking part in the exercises starting Tuesday. Drills aim to assess various types of homegrown unmanned aircraft, including reconnaissance and combat drones. Tehran's always stressed its military power poses no threat to anyone and serves as a deterrent. Journalist and political commentator Mohsen Abbas says that Iran needs a very sophisticated defense mechanism because it is surrounded by the U.S. and Israeli bases all around its borders.
Iran has a need for this military hardware and this defense of a very highly technological nature because they are up against virtually every border from Afghanistan through to Azerbaijan, through to Iraq and the Gulf itself. Iran is surrounded by the Anglo-Zionist imperialist military bases and missiles themselves. But of course, missiles is just one aspect. The standing army amounts to at least a million personnel in itself, so huge numbers. They've also advanced in terms of naval power, which they've been flexing their muscles on over the last kind of year or so, particularly with what I would describe as unconventional naval power, as well as the conventional sort. The most unconventional being speedboats, literally, which are now armed with very sophisticated missile capability, which is a threat to even the 7th Fleet of the Americans, which is based out there in the Persian Gulf, in Bahrain and other ports. The bottom line is that Iran has a solution to virtually everything that the Americans and their Atlantic partners have in terms of their belligerent efforts to dominate that part of the world.
Tehran is hosting the 37th International Islamic Unity Conference. The annual conference is organized by Iran-based World Forum for Proximity of Islamic Schools of Thought and takes place during the Islamic Unity Week, marking the birth anniversary of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Yusuf Misha Ahmadi has your story.
Over 200 Muslim scholars and researchers have once again gathered in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this time to take part in the 37th International Islamic Unity Conference, an annual event that provides an opportunity for them to share their views on recent political developments affecting the Muslim world, and also a platform that allows them to bridge the gaps and promote solidarity among Muslims worldwide. Views that were reiterated in the opening address by Iran's president, who also emphasized on the liberation of Al-Quds and Palestine as the most important challenge in the Muslim world.
Unity in the Muslim world becomes more important day by day in the face of the enemy's plots. Sacrilegious acts of desecration of the Holy Quran, heinous crimes by Takfiri terrorist groups, and normalization deals with the Israeli occupying regime are only a few to name. A new world order is emerging, and the Muslim Ummah must establish itself as a key player in this new order.
Participants explained that becoming united means cohesion and solidarity, and safeguarding the interests of the Islamic Ummah, which is demonstrated by adherence to the Holy Quran and Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, which is why the annual conference, organized by the Iran-based World Forum for Proximity of Islamic Schools of Thought, takes place during the birth anniversary of the Prophet, referred to as Islamic Unity Week. The 37th International Conference on Islamic Unity started with online panels on September 28th. The event will continue until October the 3rd. Yusuf Misha Ahmadi, Tehran.
And Iran is also hosting the 5th Mustafa Prize ceremony. That is a science and technology award granted to top researchers and scientists from across the Muslim world. It's been held since 2015 biannually, and this year's ceremony is held in the Iranian city of Isfahan. Our correspondent, Mati Abbasian, is now going to join us from the central city there for more details. Hello, Mati. Hope you're safe and doing well. Tell us about the Mustafa Prize and what it's all about.
This ceremony recognizes and honors the top works of scientists and researchers of the Muslim world. So far, since September 28th, that the official, that the Mustafa Prize, the fifth edition, was inaugurated. So far, there have been different sorts of meetings between scientists and researchers, Muslim scientists and researchers, who have traveled to Iran to participate in this event. The opening ceremony of the Mustafa Prize was inaugurated by the President of the Islamic Republic, Mr. Ebrahim Raisi, who highlighted the fact that the role of Muslim scientists and researchers and scholars has been very important in the history of mankind, and he urged them, or better to say, called on all Muslim scientists and researchers to continue their efforts in order to to help humanity more. Now, the following days after the inauguration ceremony were different technical meetings between Iranian scientists and researchers, the university heads, and other scholars, and the high-profile, scholars who have traveled to Iran. Different topics were discussed. Among them, the most important ones were nanotechnology, biomedicine, and biotechnology, as well as AI.
All right, thank you, Matthew. We're going to swing over now, if we could, to Karaj, just outside of Tehran, where we're joined by Mr. Fashid Balgherian, political analyst there. Hello, Mr. Balgherian. Do we have there he is. Hope you're safe and doing well out there in Karaj, not too far away from where we're at. Now, the Iranian president, you just heard our correspondent, hail the role of Iranian scholar, or not Iranian, pardon, Muslim scholars and intellectuals and scientists to the realm of science. I like to take it a step further and say science will not be nearly where it is today without Islamic contribution to it, whether it's math, science, nanotechnology, whether it's physics, or the stars and planets.
It's better to say the Muslims and the Asians together, because, you know, opening ceremony is being held. But the fact is the venue is very important. Isfahan, what we call it, we dubbed it as the half of the world, you know, it's our proverb. Anyway, Isfahan is the center of the perfection of Islamic and Persian science and in the Safavid era. So the fact is right now, if you are reliant, if you you have your reliance to the other state, technology and science, it means you don't have any independency. Now, the countries like Iran, such Iran and the other Muslim countries, any Asian countries, they are trying to fly over the path through independency. This is very important because, you know, science can produce, can lead to the power, and the power is the most important value or the most important variable in the international relation and the anarchic international system, world system. So your reporter says a very beautiful word, mankind. Mankind is very important because, you know, if you remember the 16,000 Europe era with the most important philosophers such as Francis Bacon, Immanuel Kant, Descartes, they used to use this type of word, mankind. They wanted to dominate the nature and dominate the universe with science and to change the type of the mankind, a new formation of mankind. They call it the great instauration. What nowadays the globalists are trying to implement it by grand reset. What they are doing by famine, by world famine, by GMO products, by technology, by artificial intelligence, by insurgency, and many kind of, five generation of the war. So science can lead us to power, and we can use this power for balancing in international level. And not only in the defense system, and not only in the cyber, in technology, in artificial intelligence, in medical, in nuclear, and even for humanitarian sciences, we need power. And for power, for producing power, we need the science. This is very important. And this kind of the award and prizing ceremonies, especially in this venue like Isfahan, is very important that to produce science, to introduce ourselves as we are the center of the science of the world and used to be. Anyway, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Balgherian, pleasure to have you on. Thank you for joining us on the program. Mr. Fashid Balgherian, political analyst there, joining us out of Karaj. Meanwhile, in the U.S., New Yorkers have taken to the streets to show anger at NATO and the country's military and financial support for Ukraine.
Unification of peace forces in the United States, recognizing that it's the United States and NATO who are are to blame and the fundamental cause of the conflict in Ukraine, and that if we can force the U.S. government to stop sending money and weapons to Ukraine, the war will end the very next day.
The NATO is one of the fundamental arms of the imperialist world system, and that system, its interest lies in the perpetuation of imperial capital, the extraction of labor and wealth from the dispossessed, and the spread of weapons intended to destroy and to suppress the world's working poor.
Protesters urged the government to spend on crucial sectors like education and housing. They're also blaming the U.S. and NATO for the conflict in the East European country. Since 2022, Washington has provided over $75 billion in aid to Kiev. U.S. as NATO allies, especially European countries, have also sent billions of dollars worth of military aid to Ukraine. This has sparked protests in those countries as well. Russia has repeatedly condemned the West's military support for Ukraine, saying it will only further prolong the conflict. Thousands of people flocked to the streets of Catalonia's capital to mark the sixth anniversary of its failed independence referendum of 2017. Pro-independence demonstrators waved the Catalan flag and chanted anti-Spain slogans as they marched through the streets of Barcelona. Spain's flag was also set ablaze during the rally, as protesters are calling for Catalonia's independence still. Back in 2017, a referendum was held on the region's independence, which was declared unconstitutional by the central government in Madrid. The move also led to the arrest and ouster of more than 20 Catalan leaders. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
The top three economies of the Eurozone, namely Italy, France, and Spain, have one thing in common. They've accumulated large amounts of debt that in one form or another is affecting their growth, dragging EU growth along with it. But Italy's economic indicators are showing a more dire scenario for the country, especially when it comes to manufacturing sector, for example. Hi, I'm Kavit Ahwai. Welcome to Economic Divide. Some of the highlights of this program: Italy's economic crisis. Factory layoffs is for one. Then you have manufacturing contraction, which has led to a manufacturing recession as of April 2023. Obviously not a good sign for that country. At least in that particular sector, it's pointing to a recession. Then you have economic contraction, Q4. Production has dropped. You have underperformance relative to other EU members. Why is Italy not doing that well? Which is pointing to a recession overall, not just in manufacturing. And then we're going to give you some news about the EU economy as a whole as to why it's not doing that well. You have a money supply decrease, you have lending and deposits have declined, and you have record bankruptcies.
Italy's economy is in crisis. According to the latest data, the country's GDP shrank by 0.4% in the second quarter of 2023 when compared with the first quarter. The downward revision has cast doubts over prospects for the rest of the year as Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni's right-wing government prepares to draw up his 2024 budget. As recently as last week, the leader of the country's right-wing coalition government was predicting her nation would outperform Germany and France this year. Italy's manufacturing sector also contracted in August for a fifth consecutive month. The August manufacturing PMI index came in at 45.4, up from 44.5 in July, but still well below the 50 mark that separates growth from contraction, raising the risk of weak economic activity extending into the third quarter. Rome is officially forecasting full-year 2023 growth of 1%, slowing sharply from the buoyant 3.7% rate in 2022. The government is also preparing a 2024 budget that is expected to stick to Italy's commitments to keeping its deficit on a downward trend. That will leave little leeway for stimulus.
Time to look at some of the online posts on this. We took a look at some websites. The first one, Economic Forecast for Italy, the latest macroeconomic forecast for that country, where it said Italy's economic growth started slowing down last year, halting the post-pandemic rebound, which had lifted growth to 7% for the year 2021 and 3.7% for 2022. Went on to say after a pickup in the first quarter of 2023, GDP decreased by 0.4% in the second quarter, driven by falling domestic demand, particularly investments in construction. Next, Italy's economic resurgence, a prime opportunity for G7 presidency in 2024. More optimistic look, it seems, with this entry, where it said the 2024 G7 presidency will provide a unique opportunity for Italy to present the structural progress made by its economy in recent years, particularly after the pandemic. Quite a contrast to the previous post. Next, the date here is important. This was posted on September the 1st, 2023. Italy's economy shrinks in the latest quarter, casting a shadow over the outlook. Italy's GDP shrank by 0.4% in the second quarter from the first, and its manufacturing sector contracted in August for a fifth consecutive month. Obviously, that points to how manufacturing is a problem in that country. And our last entry, again, the date important here. This was July 31st, 2023. Protests erupt in Italy over cuts to poverty relief scheme, where cuts to this scheme by Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni's rightist government will affect hundreds of thousands of people. All right, so we figured some of those entries gives you a clue as to how the economy there in Italy is struggling. But more importantly, let's find out what our guests think. Let me welcome our guests for this first segment of the Q&A. We have Alex Craner joining us. He's an author and geopolitical analyst. Alex Craner, welcome to Economic Divide. We're looking at Italy's economy to not performing that well. And in this particular question, I'd like to zoom in on manufacturing, in particular how factories have laid off many. The manufacturing sector has contracted since last year, in the middle of last year, up till now, where people and analysts have said there's a manufacturing recession. Why has Italy's manufacturing done so poorly?
I think that the causes of this crisis stretch back into the early 1990s, you know, and I think that they have the root in the Western financial markets. So it stems from the financial markets. You know, just a year ago, Italian 10-year government bond was yielding 0.6%. Today, it's trading at over 4.4%. And it looks like it's trading higher. And, you know, if the interest rates break higher, it spells a whole lot of trouble for the Italian economy. You know, in 2016, I think 17% of all assets on the books of Italian banks were marked as bad loans. And, you know, by last year, that miraculously fell to 4%. All that happened is that the bank regulators declared these loans as good loans. They approved them as a collateral for the repo markets, and they got lost in Europe's Target 2 rebalancing system.
Okay, that's a very important point that our guests there talked about, something which many perhaps are not informed as to how these loans have just been written off, and I'm sure the figures are pretty high. Our next guest, Claudio Cosa, joins us. He's an associate professor in economic policy at the University of Naples in Italy. Claudio Cosa, welcome to Economic Divide. The economy in Italy is reported to shrink unexpectedly. We're looking at the second half of 2023, which we're in right now, and it's even said that there's going to be a sharper production drop compared to the other Eurozone economies, which brings about the natural question, why is Italy underperforming when it comes to its peers?
Well, in my opinion, we have always ups and downs. So, in general, we have a European crisis that is now, I mean, since at least over the last 15 years. So, last year, it seemed that Italy was better performing as compared to other industrial economies in Europe. This year and this quarter, it seems the opposite. So, for instance, we have other large industrial countries that have been facing problems or stagnation. Think about Germany, that is zero, but also Poland had a decrease this year, while, for instance, France and Spain were better performing. But maybe last year there was a problem with France. So we should not look too much at momentary problems of the single economy, while look at the trend. And the trend is negative for all European countries, Eurozone.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
When it comes to a country like Italy, it's hard to imagine how it's not doing that well in terms of its economy. But that is the case. We are going to get into the reasons why that is happening, although there are many, but hopefully you'll get an idea through this in-depth section of the program. All right, Italy's GDP growth, so you can get a taste as to what's happening with this country. In the year 2018, very modest growth, just above 0%. The year 2020 is when COVID hit. Then the year 2021, it shot up. That's called the COVID bounce back. And then the year 2022, which it did relatively well, considering the fact that it carries so much debt. But why is it that it's not progressing, it's not improving in its GDP output? In order to find that out, the year-on-year annual average, that's what we picked for Germany, for Italy relative to the rest of the countries in the euro area. Germany, for example, 1.9% in terms of its GDP growth for the year 2022. And then for the year 2022, it did relatively well, 3.9%, okay? But then 0.3% for the year 2023, okay? And then for the year 2024, modest growth that has happened there. For its growth for 2023, we're looking at roughly around 1%, okay? This gives you an idea about how it's doing with some of its peers in the euro area, the countries we picked, Spain, France, and Germany. So looking at the most recent year, which would be the year that we're in, overall we can see that not only are other countries not doing that well in the euro area, such as the powerhouse, for example, Germany, or France, Italy, again, very, very low growth. Let's move on to the inflation rate, okay? The categories that we picked, all items in general, then ones that are only food and energy, we deducted, and then we broke it down to food and energy being the top categories where inflation has been registered. The UK, for example, 7.9% roughly is what we're looking at for the inflation rate there when it comes to all its items. Now, in terms of Italy, again, we did a comparison here. The countries we picked, the UK, Germany, and France. Italy came in at 7.6% for all the items. But then when it came to all items, less food and energy, this is where it ranked in terms of its inflation, which is a little bit above 5%, or actually just a little bit below 5%. But then it shot back up. Food and energy seem to have the same value. And that value is a little bit over 10%. We're looking at roughly around 11 or 12%. Okay, this shows, again, a comparison in the EU area, the Eurozone, as it is called. France, Germany, and the UK being the other countries. Of course, UK is not part of the Eurozone, but it is in Europe. So that gives you an idea about the inflation and how it's impacting the country. Next up, this is very important because the Eurozone is known for this, and this is about the loans. Okay, now we picked out the outstanding loans and put it into perspective with the countries that carry those high loans, such as France, Spain, and Germany. That is the French, Spanish, and the German economies. Italy does have a substantial amount of loans that it has gotten. The loans that it carries out up, in turn has an effect on the European Central Bank because of the fact that these loans get dispersed from those banks, so that it is ranking relatively high. And the second quarter of 2021, along with the fourth quarter of that year, the loans ranked pretty high. Let me put another piece of information in perspective for you in terms of the type of loan that Italy is grappling with. This is a pretty incredible one, and it has to deal with Italy's COVID loan, how much it had to borrow. 123 billion euros, 123.2 billion euros. That much money Italy actually borrowed. Now, obviously that's a high figure, but there are other countries also, not only in Europe, but in the Eurozone, who have had extensive and high amounts of money that they dispersed because of their COVID-related economic problems that they were experiencing. So this also puts into perspective the amount of loan that Italy had to endure, including this big one, which is 123.2 billion euros. Now, what about Italy's debt? Okay, let's put that into perspective by putting it next to other countries in the Eurozone. We're looking at around a little over 2.5 trillion euros that the debt of Italy is. And then when you put it next to other countries like Spain, Portugal, Greece, France, and Ireland, they are coming in at roughly 2.3 trillion euros, roughly, or 2.25 trillion euros. So that's Italy's debt next to other countries. Also, to put things into perspective for you a little bit, we went and looked at the growing debt that has occurred for Italy through the years. We started with the year 2020. And look how it just keeps increasing. All the way through to January 2023, I believe that's the highest debt that Italy is carrying. And that is over 2.5 trillion euros, roughly 525 trillion euros. That's a lot of debt that Italy has accumulated. And that's the problem that not only is Italy experiencing in the Eurozone, but also a lot of other countries, such as France and Spain. They're carrying a lot of debt, which has dragged down the Eurozone economy. All right. I think that's enough for you in terms of facts and figures to try to understand how Italy is doing, especially in the context of the Eurozone. And we brought in some other countries for you. But let's have our guest dissect this for you. Alex Craner, author and geopolitical analyst, rejoins us. Alex Craner, welcome back to Economic Divide. In terms of the question I'd like to ask you is the money supply has decreased in the Eurozone. Now, this is the first time this has happened in 13 years. At the same time, private sector lending, that has stagnated. You have deposits that have also declined. The second quarter of 2023, bankruptcies have gone up. It's a record. That's the sixth quarter in a row, the highest since 2015. My question is, are we looking at another EU financial crisis?
Yes, I think we are looking at another EU financial crisis. These crises are a mathematical certainty, given the monetary system that we operate under. Namely, this system is only stable for as long as it grows. At present, you know, with the Federal Reserve in the United States tightening the monetary policy, increasing interest rates, and reducing their balance sheet, the EU, the ECB, in order to stem the flight of capital to the United States from Europe, they had to follow the same policy. In spite of the fact that it's a known thing that if you do this, you know, you begin to shrink the money supply, that there's going to be a significant segment of your economy, you know, firms and as well as individuals who are going bankrupt. And so we see that happening now in real life. This was predicted, and this will not stop until the monetary policy is loosened again.
All right, wow. Well, that's not good news for the Eurozone as a whole. Claudio Cozza rejoins us, associate professor in economic policy at the University of Naples. Claudio Cozza, welcome back to Economic Divide. You know, I was going to ask you another question, but our guest there talks about how, you know, there might be a risk of another financial crisis happening for Eurozone as a whole. I mean, some of the indicators are pretty stark. Money supply decreasing for the first time in 13 years. You have deposits that have declined. You're looking at things like bankruptcy declarations have also increased. And this is, again, the highest since 2015, as I mentioned in my previous question. So is it really possible now that the EU might be experiencing another financial crisis?
Yes, I think we are in a way in the same financial crisis that has our rebounds and ups and downs over time. But yes, there could be another financial crisis. The problem with the small firms, as I said before, 99% of Italian firms are small and medium enterprises. This means that they are not able to self-fund, especially in times of crisis. So they have very low or even negative cash flows. So they are not able to self-fund themselves. And they need the banking system to support them. But when the banking system goes under pressure, and of course, as happened now for the 10th time, the European Central Bank increased the interest rates, the banking system is not helping small and medium enterprises.
Italy is not alone in the current climate of crisis. Business insolvencies in the EU have hit record highs. According to the bloc's official statistics agency, Eurostat, the number of businesses declaring bankruptcy in the second quarter of 2023 increased by 8.4% compared to the first quarter, fueled by trouble in the food and housing sector. Figures mean bankruptcies have increased for the sixth consecutive quarter, unseen since Eurostat started collecting data in 2015. Crisis comes amid rising interest rates in the Eurozone monetary region. The European Central Bank piled on a 10th straight interest rate increase, pressing forward in its fight against stubbornly high inflation that has been plaguing consumers, even as worries grow that higher borrowing costs could help push the economy into a recession.
The options are on the table, to continue to hike or to hold. And we also know that it will vary meeting by meeting because we want to be determined by the data.
Financial squeeze could point to a further downward trend. The ECB's measure of overall money in the Eurozone system decreased 0.4% in the year to July, down from growth of 0.6% in June. The main cause of the decline in the bloc's money supply in 13 years was a drop in the annual growth of lending to the private sector. The rate was 1.6% in July, the slowest rate since 2016. Lending to governments also declined 2.7%, the biggest fall since 2007.
Hello and welcome.
welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Matti Apossian. We have been covering Italy's economic situation, but what about the EU as a whole, which Italy is a member of? How is the EU doing? In order to do that, let's first start by looking at EU's top economies. At first glance, these look to be impressive numbers, especially Germany's output. But as the saying goes, looks can be very deceiving. Why deceiving? Let's go back to the 2008 world financial crisis. In order for Europe to deal with the problem, like the US, it had to exercise monetary stimulus. It called it the Asset Purchase Program, or APP for short. In December 2008, the European Council agreed on an EU-wide economic stimulus of around 200 billion euros, as revealed here in the Economic Recovery Packages in EU Member States report. Even though that figure cushioned some of the losses from the financial crisis, it soon became apparent that the EU needed to continue its stimulus because the EU economies were not rebounding as quickly as the EU had anticipated. The stimulus figures were astounding. The APP, or Asset Purchase Program, had become the European Central Bank's signature policy. The EU was buying bonds from commercial banks at the pace of 60 billion euros a month. The ECB revealed that since May 2015, it had pumped over 2.5 trillion euros of liquidity into the eurozone economy through the APP. And that does it for this Quick Take section.
The eurozone economy is not doing that well. It really has not climbed out of the 2008 debt crisis in some respects. And the double whammy of the COVID pandemic, well, that stunted its growth. Even after all the stimulus that's been pumped into its economy, over 2 trillion euros, growth has been minimal. In the meantime, you have things like inequality to have increased across the eurozone. What's the solution then? Well, ending the Ukraine war, that's the starters. That's for starters, and not following U.S. diktats in terms of things like the Ukraine war, that could also be a start. That does it for this edition of the program. Thank you so much for tuning in. From Mika Vitale and the team, it's goodbye. On to the next Economic Divide.
أزور سيدي ومولاي ومعتمدي ورجاي.
The ocean of dua.
الإمام الحسين عليه السلام زيارة.
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves? Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us.
فأسأل الله الذي أكرم مقامك وأكرمني بك أن يرزقني طلب ثأرك مع إمام منصور من أهل بيت محمد صلى الله عليه وآله.
Dear listeners, as you were previously with us, we were discussing about this part of Ziyaratul Ashura. بأبي أنت وأمي. May my father and mother be sacrificed for you. لقد عظم مصابي بك. Indeed, my affliction due to what happened to you is immense. فأسأل الله الذي أكرم مقامك وأكرمني بك. Therefore, I ask Allah, who venerated your station and honored me through you, أن يرزقني طلب ثارك مع إمام منصور, to provide me the succor, to avenge for your blood with a supported leader, من أهل بيت محمد صلى الله عليه وآله, from the family of Muhammad, may Allah pour down his mercy on him and his progeny. Regarding this, we were saying that different aspects could be taken into consideration when we focus on وَأَكْرَمَنِي بِكْ, and honored me through you. Since Imam Hussein alayhi salam saved Islam through his supreme sacrifice, whosoever follows Islam is indebted to him. And it is by following Islam in its purest form that karama and human greatness can be achieved. So when we say وَأَكْرَمَنِي بِكْ and honored me through you, we actually mean that we are indebted to Imam Hussein alayhi salam because we are the true follower of Islam. Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha introduces Islam and says, وَذَلِكَ لِأَنَّهُ إِسْمُ سَلَامَةٍ وَجِمَاعُ كَرَامَةٍ. Islam is called Islam because in Islam we have the name of peace. It is the name of peace and it is the collector of greatness and karama. So in reality, any kind of greatness and karama attained by any one of us is through Imam Hussein alayhi salam. That's why we say that all the Shias are indebted to Imam Hussein alayhi salam for this complete version of Islam that has reached us.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies, it clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is do not allow tyranny, do not allow evil doing, do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah, he appreciates him, he understands his dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we're talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So, dear listeners, let's have a look at this phrase altogether. فَأَسْأَلُ اللَّهَ الَّذِي أَكْرَمَ مَقَامَكَ وَأَكْرَمَنِي بِكْ أَنْ يَرْزُقَنِي طَلَبَ ثَارِكْ. So I ask Allah, who honored your station and honored me through you, to enable me to avenge for your blood. Dear listeners, if we carefully consider this entire phrase, we might come to realize that it is highly probable that this karama spoken about with regard to both Imam Hussein alayhi salam as well as the Zayr could be closely linked and related to the provision that the Zayr eagerly seeks from Allah. Apparently, the karama spoken about is related to the supreme sacrifice of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. This is what we understand from the different parts of Ziyaratul Ashura and when we look at it all together. So, whereas the phrase akrama maqamak, honored your station, can be taken to mean the supreme sacrifice, which also is same as martyrdom or the unique martyrdom spoken about earlier, the phrase akramani bik, honored me through you, could be referring to love, to obedience, to loyalty to the Imam alayhi salam. So the Zayr asks, I ask Allah, who honored your station by enabling you to offer supreme sacrifice, and honored me through you by my love and obedience to you to enable me. What do I ask for? After all these things, I ask you, أن يرزقني طلب ثارك, to enable me to avenge your blood. It is imperative for us to realize that Ziyaratul Ashura is a divine document that teaches the Zayr, the one who recites this Ziyarah, the manner and etiquette of how to address Imam Hussein alayhi salam and how to try to follow him, how to try to base our lifestyle on what Imam Hussein alayhi salam was martyred for. How to understand the rules, those criteria Imam alayhi salam fought for. In this verse, we observe that Almighty Allah teaches the Zayr to cultivate, to nurture his spirit, to get ready to combat the forces of kufr and disbelief and nifaq, in seeking to avenge the blood of Imam Hussein alayhi salam on a daily basis. We reveal our preparedness to unite with the Imam Hussein alayhi salam and of course with the Imam of our time. The Imam of our time who, as we shall soon understand, will rise to avenge the blood of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So what do we ask for? To be helped to avenge for your blood. أن يرزقني طلب ثارك. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran.
You can also listen to The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran stresses opposition to any geopolitical change in the Caucasus region, but